You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, October 22nd, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, on the eve? No. The day of the final presidential debate dedicated to foreign policy between President Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. We'll be talking to Ari Berman, not only previewing the debate slightly, but perhaps even more importantly, getting an update on the Republican, I don't want to call it shenanigans because that sort of undersells it, attempts to keep people from voting, both in their ability to vote and I guess systemically their ability to vote, and these nut jobs coming out of Texas who are apparently going to challenge specific voters. Are you getting an image in your head of what those voters probably look like? I have one. Also on the program today, on the eve of the debate yesterday, big story in the New York Times about Iran's willingness to sit down and have bilateral negotiations with the United States being denied. Being denied by the White House and the Iranians. Who released it? Who leaked it? Who does it help? What are the implications? We'll talk about that in just a moment. More information on what happened with the Benghazi confusion. And a big report out. It doesn't say anything different than I've been saying for years, but it is an incredibly definitive report on the efficacy of tax cuts for rich people in terms of it creating jobs. All that and more. First off, I want to start by saying rest in peace, George McGovern. I think I mentioned this on the better half of the program last week. We're going to try. There was a great, or maybe it wasn't. It was all Freebie Friday.
Yeah, you and Cliff spoke about it.
Again, great movie. One bright, shining moment, if you have an opportunity to see it. And I'm trying to find our archives. We haven't quite been able to set those up of the old Majority Report. But I think we had on the filmmaker for, maybe it was the Sam Cedar Show. I can't tell. If you're a listener out there and you're aware of where what when we did it, send me an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Maybe I should save this for the better half of the program, but when I was six, I met George McGovern and Roger Mudd and a lot of cops. They actually held a campaign, I guess, stop at our house when I was 6 years old in Massachusetts. I'm not saying that's why he won Massachusetts, but it probably didn't hurt. We'll talk more about that in the better half of the program. And I just want to update, if you recall, I can't remember, we did this about a week ago, and I think we have a link to it on YouTube. The story of Billy Graham, who had embraced Mitt Romney after a meeting with him just 2 weeks ago, and then almost immediately, particularly after commenters on some blog made a point about it, scrubbed his website of all the mentions of Mormonism as a cult.
There was a Google cache available for a long time after, which means he had to have done it very recently.
Yes. No, no. They did it. It was documented. They had done it. The question is how long it had been up there. And some people think at least there's evidence of it at least being up there for at least 2 years. But if you go back into the Wayback Machine, people have seen it even further. And, you know, whether or not you think Mormonism is a cult, I don't know. Whether or not you think there's anything kookier about Mormonism than any other religion, it is not really relevant to the fact that on a dime, Billy Graham, longtime belief that Mormonism was a cult. I guess apparently Mitt Romney explained to him it's not a cult. And this coming, there is a YouTube out now, apparently done, and we will post this on the blog. I don't know if you've seen this, Matt. It was a hidden camera of, it must have been shot by a Mormon or a former Mormon, I'm not sure, who went into, I guess it's a service, and documented 7 minutes worth of secret footage. And I got to tell you, I mean, look, I've been into ultra-Orthodox Hasidic temples, and it seems very odd. And this seems odd as well. There are secret handshakes. Apparently, people are exposed to the truth about these handshakes through these veils. It looks like the interior of this temple, like when you get into the sort of inner sanctum, it looks like out of like a Woody Allen's sleeper. So I would recommend to all of you, head to majority.fm. We will post the video. It is, like I say, I'm sure, you know, there are odd things in every religion. And like I say, I've been into Hasidic temples that look, you know, odd. And maybe they seemed less odd to me because I go to a Reform temple, and so the Hebrew isn't as sort of jarring. But they have recorded voices in here that sound sort of like you're going to something at Disney, and it's telling you,
you will receive message from behind the veil.
It's interesting. I mean, you know.
Going back to Billy Graham for a second, did he never meet a Mormon before Mitt Romney?
Never one so convincing. I don't know. I guess if only these fundamentalist beliefs were so easily dispensed with in other areas, maybe they wouldn't be so fundamentalist.
Maybe someone should introduce them to a gay.
Yes, it would be interesting to sit down with a gay and see how quickly they scrub their website. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to the lovely Ari Berman. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. It is always a pleasure to welcome my next guest to the program for a myriad of reasons. Not the least of which, our past betting experiences have made me feel very proud of myself. Of course, I'm referring to The Nation magazine's Ari Berman. Ari, are you there?
Oh, sorry, Sam. I was waiting for some more superlatives before you...
Well, I would also say Ari is the writer of a wonderful book, Herding Donkeys. Probably one of the best books on the 50 state strategy. Would that be how you describe it? The Howard Dean campaign?
Yeah. I kind of describe it as the arc of Democratic politics from Howard Dean to Obama. So it's about more than just the 50-state strategy, but the 50-state strategy is really kind of the core anchor of what the book is about and how that changed the Democratic Party and how that changed American politics.
You got that on audiobook?
Not an audiobook, but if I did, I think you should be the one reading it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. We can talk about that in the future for your next book.
Are you going to wager another $200 on Obama winning 52% now?
You know, I would be willing to take that bet.
You would, really?
I think he's going to get, I think he's going to, well, you know, it could be 51.3.
So you really think he's going to get over 50? You're disregarding the latest polling.
I am peering through the most recent polling. What do you think about that?
Well, maybe you're more expertly peering through it than I am.
Well, that's quite possible. That's why I have you on, Ari, to enforce that sense of myself. But we can talk about the bet at another time, because the one of the cogs in the wheel, as it were, of people of voting as they hope to, has of course been the systemic voter suppression that the Republicans have engaged in since 2010, and which range from, and you have covered this probably better than any individual in this country, in my estimation, and I read everybody. They range from the redistricting that took place under Republican legislators for this 2010 census, probably the reason why there's no chance for the next four House election cycles for Democrats to take over the House, barring some major turn of events, although that's always possible, to the systemic attempts to change voting laws in about 10 or 11 states across the country that have met with varying degrees of success. Let's start there, because there has been a rash of federal court rulings that have basically squashed a lot of the attempts by Republicans to suppress the vote.
Yeah, so the situation with voter suppression is not as dire as it was a year ago. We've had court decisions block or temporarily stall voter suppression laws in about 10 different states. And that's significant because that's also includes crucial swing states. So voter ID laws have been stalled in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. They are not on the books. Voter registration cutbacks have been overturned in Florida. Early voting limits have been overturned in Ohio. And so really, the landscape on voter suppression, while still very concerning because 13 states do have new voting restrictions in place, is not as bad as it has been when I was reporting on it for the past year or 2 years. And that's the good news. The bad news is that even if a law has been overturned, it doesn't mean that there's not going to be a significant amount of confusion resulting from the law. It doesn't mean that people won't turn out because they believe that they need some ID that they don't actually need. It doesn't mean that they won't have been able to register to vote, so thus they are ineligible to vote. So there's still a lot of problems resulting from this law, but it is better than it was a year ago.
Yeah, that seems to be the story, at the very least, in Pennsylvania, where there seems to be an active campaign by the state and by newspapers in Pennsylvania to literally misinform people about what's going on there.
The state's advertising is still pretty misleading. I mean, they say in kind of small print that you need ID, but they're still running the same format of ads they had run before, which basically says, show ID. It's patriotic to quote unquote show it.
This election day, if you have it, show it. Well, I mean,
what they say is, and some of this is because of the confusing aspect of the ruling, and some of it is just because the confusing way that the state is doing it. But the judge basically said poll workers can ask for ID, but voters don't have to show it. And essentially, that's what the TV ads say as well. Now, the important thing is, are voters going to understand that even if poll workers ask them for ID, that they don't need to show that ID, that they actually can vote without ID like they have voted in every previous election in Pennsylvania history? The ACLU and other voting rights groups just filed another injunction with a judge who blocked this law, saying the state needs to take down this advertising because it's just confusing people.
It's absurd. It's utterly absurd. I mean, it's in some ways it's just, it's stunning, because, you know, you like to think at least on some level that there's some state bureaucrats who say stuff like, you know what, my job really is to make sure that the vote goes well. And they are putting out misinformation. I mean, it really is misinformation. There's a story out there too, that Mount Pleasant Journal, one of the newspapers run by, I guess it's Trib Total Media, which is owned by Richard Mellon Scaife, who we know is a longtime right winger, is writing headlines. There's one, I'm looking at a headline from last Thursday, in one of his Scaife's newspapers. The headline is "Photo ID Required for November Election."
Yeah, well, I mean, this just kind of begs the question, are people just misinformed, or are they deliberately misinforming people? And I don't know if we know the motives of all these people, but there was a lot of attention given to this ruling, which said voter ID is not required. I mean, it was a national story. Everyone in Pennsylvania at this point should know what the law is. And so it's very disconcerting that we keep seeing attempts by conservative supporters of voter ID to make it seem like there is a law on the books when in fact there is not.
Yeah, I mean, it seems pretty irresponsible of a newspaper to get that wrong, right? I mean, this is, you know, we're talking a newspaper that is specifically writing a story on this. It's pretty hard to imagine that they didn't quite know that this law had been
repealed. I mean, it is hard to imagine. I mean, newspapers make mistakes all the time, but you do kind of wonder what the intent is here. And the other thing is that, you know, low information voters aren't necessarily going to be paying a huge amount of attention to the ruling. So even though it was a national story, and even though it got a lot of attention that the photo ID law has been at least temporarily blocked pending a full trial after the election, I still believe that there are going to be a fair number of people in Pennsylvania who believe that they need ID. And so the question is, are they just not going to show up, those without ID? Are they just not going to show up because they feel like they don't have the right ID? Or will the message get to them that they're going to be able to vote? I know, for example, that the groups that I spent time with who were helping people get IDs were now helping to tell people, listen, you don't need this ID. Get it if you can, but you don't need it for this election. So there is this voter education effort is going on, but we don't know if it's going to reach enough people in time. And that's why I wrote this new piece about the election protection effort for 2012, because I think that's going to be really critical, because even in states where voter suppression laws have been overturned, there's still likely to be a lot of confusion on election day. And that's why it's really important to have people who know the law and can help voters be out in force, because there's just going to be a ton of confusion either in states that have passed new voter suppression laws or in states that have repealed voter suppression laws.
Right. And now let's talk about this, because I think that there is going to be this whole True the Vote, is that what it's called, is going to.
Yeah, True the Vote.
I think there are going to be some very, very nasty instances involving this group over the, you know, I don't know where, but you're basically, you've got the frothiest of the most lunatic fringe
being organized and funded by billionaires, essentially to go out. In some instances, their job is basically just to harass people, as far as I can tell. Tell us about Truth of Vote.
So Truth of Vote started in 2010. It was organized by the Tea Party, and the goal was to root out so-called voter fraud by challenging voters at the polling place. And they started in Houston, Texas, in Harris County. And basically what they did is they put white conservative activists in predominantly minority voting areas.
I'm so shocked. So I'm so shocked.
That in itself was pretty telling. And a number of complaints, more than 50 complaints, were filed against these activists in Harris County in 2010. It didn't get a lot of attention because Texas wasn't a swing state in 2010, so it wasn't a national story. Now they claim to be training a million quote-unquote poll watchers, otherwise known as voter challengers. I don't think they're going to get to that number. That's just an enormous number. But right. I do think we're going to see an uptick in these voter challengers. And the thing is, if you look at the law, and this is what's disconcerting, according to the Brennan Center, 39 states allow polling place challenges, and only 15 require some sort of documentation to make the challenge. So take Florida, for example. If I see you in line, Sam, and I say to a poll worker, listen, I think Sam Cedar is an undocumented immigrant or a felon wrongly casting a ballot. I mean, clearly you're not, but for purposes of argument, you are. You would automatically have to cast a provisional ballot in Florida. Now, in 2008, 2.1 million provisional ballots were cast, and 69% were counted. That means 31% weren't counted. And we're talking about a state like Florida with a long history of not counting every vote. So True the Vote could literally go around to hundreds of thousands of voters in Florida and just say to them, you're ineligible to vote, and now they're going to have to cast a provisional ballot. And I think that's a very scary situation, because not only could that lead to some ballots not being counted, but that's going to lead to longer lines at the polls, which is going to lead to fewer people voting. That's going to possibly lead to the outcome being delayed. We could see a return of situations like we saw in 2000 with hanging chads. Should these provisional ballots be counted? Should they not be counted? Was there voter fraud? Was there not voter fraud? Simply because some Tea Party activists decided that he didn't like the way someone looked, and thus they must be an ineligible voter. So I think it is troubling to think about what this can mean during early voting and on election day.
Now, my understanding is that at least in Texas, and I presume in many other states, I mean, it's one thing to have, okay, I show up here and I have documentation showing, like, look, I have Sam Cedar's, I have this affidavit from Sam Cedar saying I'm not a citizen. It's one thing to need to show that. It's another thing to go up and say, like, I will attest, I have no documentation, but I will attest that I saw a document that said that Sam Cedar was not a legal immigrant or a legal citizen or whatever it is. And then it's another to say that there is absolutely no legal liability on your part in challenging me. In other words, you can just go willy-nilly in Texas, at least, right? And tell me if you know about this in other states, and say, I'm going to challenge that dude, and I don't have to sign an affidavit. I don't have to pledge that this is to the best of my knowledge. It's just, that's what I'm doing.
No, and you know, that's the thing, and I don't know the specifics of the law in every different state. But in some of these states, the burden of proof was on the voter, not the challenger, to prove who they are. And that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because if you're voting, you're already registered to vote, you're already on the voting roll, so you've already cleared some process to be able to vote. The challenger hasn't cleared any process. I mean, anyone can be a challenger. Now, they can't get into the polling place unless they are an official poll worker. Now, the scary thing is that True the Vote in places like New Mexico is urging its activists to become GOP poll workers. So some of these Tea Party activists could actually be inside the polling booth as official representatives of the Republican Party, which could just lead to further chaos.
It's
And so, okay, there is pushback on this by an election protection coalition. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, so the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights is leading this election protection coalition, which includes a lot of different groups, including civil rights groups like the NAACP and good government groups like Common Cause. It was launched after 2000. They run the 866-hour vote hotline, and I think the work they're doing this year is going to be really critically important. They're recruiting 10,000 volunteers, and they're also staffing this hotline in a lot of states. And I looked at their website basically in real time during the Wisconsin primary and during the Wisconsin recall election. And during that recall election, the voter ID law in Wisconsin, which has now been blocked, was not on the books. But still, you got a lot of calls into the hotline, which you could see in real time on their website, saying poll workers asking people for ID or students told they're not eligible to vote in this certain polling precinct. And then the volunteers with this election protection coalition were able to tell voters, listen, you are allowed to vote. You don't need ID to vote. Or they're able to go to the poll workers and say, listen, this is a mistake. One thing you have to realize about poll workers is the average age of a poll worker in this country is 72 years old. They're mostly retired people. Sometimes they are going to give misleading information out of malice, but most of the time they're just going to give misleading information because they don't know what the updated law is. They're old.
Well, it's not just that they're old, too. I mean, the other issue is it's not like these people are full-time employees. They're brought in. There isn't a tremendous amount of money spent on training these people. And they're brought in at the last minute and basically given poor information and you know, probably a 75-page booklet. Here it is. Don't forget, tomorrow you're going to be the poll. You're going to be working the polls. I mean, it's a broken system because we have
it's a broken system. I mean, Pennsylvania doesn't even have a statewide training for poll workers. It's county by county. And there's no guarantee that the counties have even done a training about the voter ID law. I mean, they're required to give, my understanding is, one training per election cycle. So it's not like suddenly the law was struck down in Pennsylvania, and then the state said, okay, now we're going to train all the poll workers in what the law actually is. They haven't done that. And so there's a pretty good chance that poll workers are going to be giving out wrong information on election day. And I think it's critical that voters be aware of their rights. And I think the Election Protection Coalition can't mitigate all of these problems, but I think the fact that they've been preparing for this for quite a long time makes me feel a little bit better about the integrity of the vote.
My buddy, Lawyer Matthew, as we call him on this program, sent out an email to his fellow lawyer friends. But where can people get information if you're an attorney? You want to be part of this election protection, which people just call 866-OUR-VOTE hotline?
Yeah, there's also a website. I think it's just 866ourvote.org. Yeah, it is. It's just 866ourvote.org. I know there's going to be a bunch of different trainings. I was at the first training they did in Virginia a few weeks ago, but I know they're doing 15 trainings in that state alone, and I think pretty much in every battleground state there's going to be a training. They're active in 20 states, and so you can go on the website and see what they're doing. That's on the nonpartisan side. Obviously, the Obama campaign is also going to be mounting a pretty major effort. I decided to focus on the nonpartisan effort because I think it's important that the vote be nonpartisan. Right. I think it is disturbing how much the GOP has manipulated the right to vote in this country, which is basically something that both parties essentially should be equally committed to upholding.
Now, my understanding is as soon as you dial that number, you are automatically eligible for a new Black Panther membership card, and then you get admitted into the secret post-Acorn society. Is that right?
Yeah, what happens is the Organizing for America, which is now the new outgrowth of Acorn, will immediately give you a 10-step training on how to commit voter fraud.
Right.
Which, funnily enough, is being illustrated in very clear ways by Republican political.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that briefly,
because something that we haven't talked about. I mean,
yeah,
all it's funny.
Okay,
everything.
Hold on.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I want to get to the debate, but it is. It turns out, ACORN is just another way to say the Republican Party for these people.
It's shocking. I mean, Republicans made all these incredible accusations, most of them untrue, about ACORN in 2008. That led to the group, which was basically one of the most effective, if not the most effective, community organizing group in America, being shut down by Congress. So it clearly influenced not only Republicans but also Democrats, because it was a Democratic Congress that ended up shutting down ACORN. Now you turn around and it is a Republican political operative paid by the RNC in battleground states like Florida, who is forging voter registration forms, and who is still working, by the way, this man, Nathan Spruill, doing GOTV activities for conservatives in more than 30 states, even though he's been shown to have committed voter registration fraud in Florida and probably in other states. Then you have this situation in Virginia, where another person employed by a GOP voter registration form trashed voter registration forms the day before they were due, or the day they were due, that was the cutoff in Virginia. So you have a situation where Republicans have forged voter registration forms, have changed names on voter registration forms, and have trashed voter registration forms, none of which ACORN did. What ACORN did is basically poor people employed by the organization, they put Mickey Mouse or whomever on the voter registration form as a way to make more money. When ACORN saw those irregularities, they gave them voluntarily to election officials. They weren't caught committing voter fraud. They reported the irregularities that were there to the election officials. The GOP people are getting caught doing this. They are breaking the law and getting caught doing it, which is a very different thing. And they've been screaming about voter fraud and voter registration fraud for the better part of at least 4 years, and passing all these laws under the pretense of stopping this fraud. And meanwhile, they're the only ones who are actually committing it.
So people really need to understand this dynamic. To the extent that there was any improprieties done by people who worked for ACORN, it was to register non-existent people as a way of hitting a quota and getting paid more money. But that would never, ever, ever impact the vote unless somebody came into the voting booth and said, my name is Mickey Mouse, my registration should be there. Now, ACORN stopped that process, but nobody was going to come in and say, my name's Mickey Mouse.
No, and the thing
the
is,
the difference here with what the Republicans are doing, they're taking legitimate registrations that they have probably collected under the guise of we're just helping people register. When they see how people have affiliated their registration, or they suspect that these people will not help them at the polls, they destroy their registration so that when that person shows up to vote, the election official says, you're not registered. I mean, that is the difference there is night and day in terms of the integrity and the right of people to vote.
Well, yeah, and regarding ACORN, under the Help America Vote Act of 2002, you already need to show some sort of proof of ID if you're a first-time voter registering to vote. So not photo ID, but you need to show a utility bill or a bank statement or something like that. So Mickey Mouse would have to produce a utility bill with his name on it from Disney World to be able to register to vote.
He wouldn't necessarily live at Disney World. I mean, I imagine there's probably a guy or two out there who have named themselves Mickey Mouse and actually have changed their name to that. But I don't think that's what is the issue here.
So the point is that it would be very, very difficult for the people that were wrongly registered as ACORN, virtually difficult, I would say likely impossible, for them to actually cast a ballot. What you have done by the Republicans here is trashing registration forms or forging them in a way that you're purposely disenfranchising voters. As you mentioned, people register to vote, believe that they're going to show up and cast a ballot, and they're not going to be on the rolls now because of what Republicans have done to disenfranchise them. So it really is night and day, and I think it's unfortunate that ACORN was basically covered 24/7 on Fox, which then seeped into the mainstream media coverage, and this GOP voter registration fraud scandal doesn't seem to be being taken nearly as seriously.
Well, I like to think that if Andrew Breitbart was still with us, he would be just enraged at this Republican shenanigan.
I'm sure.
I'll let that pass. You're not in any way responsible for a joke of that debasing of a joke. But Ari, let's move on from debasing to debating. Tonight will be the final debate between President Obama and Mitt Romney, and it will ostensibly be all foreign policy. In fact, Bob Schieffer came out with a list, basically a list of everything he was going to ask, which I don't know. That seems to me a little bit like giving people the answers before a pop quiz, although most of this is predictable. He supposedly is going to ask about America's role in the world, our longest war, Afghanistan and Pakistan, red lines, Israel and Iran, the changing Middle East and the new face of terrorism, one, and the changing Middle East, new face of terrorism, number two, and the rise of China in tomorrow's world.
Sounds like a Council on Foreign Relations summit.
Yes. I mean, I anticipate the debate's going to end up being all about Libya and how scary the Iranians are. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Obama campaign on some level is going to try to portray Mitt Romney as blustering and unsteady and in some ways too hawkish on foreign policy. But I also think that the Obama campaign is going, and the president is going to try to portray himself in some hawkish ways as well, with regards to Libya, with regards to Iran. I mean, this should be a slam dunk for the president. I mean, you know, the first debate was bad, but if he can't win a debate on foreign policy with Mitt Romney, that's catastrophic, because the president has had a pretty strong foreign policy record. Now, it's not a progressive foreign policy record, but by the standards of commander-in-chief, has the president gotten Osama bin Laden? Yes. Has the president killed a lot of terrorists? Yes. Has the president wound down the war in Iraq and got us on the path to winding down the war in Afghanistan? Yes. What has Romney done? I mean, Romney's only foreign policy experience was this disastrous trip abroad. His only noted credential is essentially being the best friend of Bibi Netanyahu, and all his advisors, which I've written about for The Nation, are the same neocons who did such a terrible job in the Bush administration. So I really think that this debate should be a pretty major opening for Obama to go on the offensive against Romney.
Yeah, it should be interesting. I'm curious as to I think the winner of this debate, of course, will be the guy who wears the largest Star of David or Israeli flag lapel pin. I anticipate Mitt Romney bringing out an Israeli flag lapel pin that could be the size of a small child. And it'll be awkward.
Jewish child in Florida.
I mean, that's what I think it's going to be. It's going to be because to the extent that there is – I mean, it seems to me that to the extent that there's any sort of voters who have not decided up their mind, decided their minds at this point, what you're going to see, there's really only, it seems to me, like three different issues that could come into play. And based on these questions, I don't even know if they all three will. One will be Israel in an attempt to, you know, persuade elderly Jewish voters in Florida for some reason, or at least that's the narrative. I mean, frankly, it's the Christian Zionists, but they're already going to vote for Romney now that Billy Graham has said has scrubbed the fact that Mormonism is a cult from his website. So I think that's in the bag there. And I think both of these candidates are going to attempt to, you know, sort of impress some of these elderly Jewish people in Florida that they're, you know, unquestioning supporters of Israel. And so then Iran scaremongering comes into that. I think if the president is smart, he will bring up things like, you know, well, when Mitt Romney keeps talking about China, he will say, So does it make you feel awkward, Mitt Romney, that your Bain Capital has sent all these jobs out for Sensata to China? Does it make you feel awkward that your Bain Capital and your personal investments and other hedge funds basically closed 14 Delphi plants and moved them to China? That, and then I think there's maybe going to be some trade talk or about, you know, the silliness of energy independence in an attempt to get sort of some of those, I guess, coal workers in Ohio and southeastern Ohio and in Pennsylvania. I don't know. I think this could be just one of the sort of the most ridiculous of the debates, because this is where Romney's entire foreign policy, it seems to me, is just predicated on completely empty sloganeering. Like, you're just, you got to be strong.
Romney's foreign policy is even harder to take seriously than his non-existent jobs plan.
Right.
I mean, he's just been such a catastrophe on foreign policy. But they've also tried to use the Karl Rove school of politics, which is a turn your opponent's advantage into a weakness. So they want voters to think about Obama not as the president who got Osama bin Laden, but the president who led to whose feckless actions led to the killing of four Americans in Libya. I mean, that's the image they want of Obama in the public's mind. And I think they've had some success, at least among conservatives, in changing that narrative. And we have seen that the president's approval rating on foreign policy has gone down, and the gap between the candidates has shrunk a little bit. So I think it's important from a leadership standpoint for Obama to open that up. But I do agree with you that basically the way that Obama will succeed in this debate is by making a link between foreign policy and domestic policy. Because right now, Romney, according to the latest polls, has a slight advantage on who would better handle the economy than Obama, which I think is odd given that Romney doesn't have a jobs plan and that Romney's numbers are improving at the very moment that the economy is starting to show real signs of getting better. And so I think the president needs to be more aggressive, I agree with you, on bringing out things like Bain Capital, and talking about how Romney's ridiculous plan to spend 4% of GDP on defense spending, which would be a massive increase, billions of extra dollars in defense that we don't need, would undermine spending or things that we have to do at home. And so the president has said in this new ad, you know, it's time to spend less money abroad and more money at home.
Right.
Or to do, he doesn't say it like that. He says it's time to do less nation building abroad and more nation building at home. But I think he needs to try to link these two issues in people's minds so people realize that the irresponsibility of Mitt Romney abroad undercuts the idea of Romney as the straightforward, competent executive at home. You can't balance the budget if you want to build five more naval ships than the Navy is asking for, right? You can't get people more jobs if you instead of spending money on education and infrastructure, you're going to spend that money on weapons that we don't need.
And right. $2 trillion added to the defense budget does not increase our security as much as making sure that our senior citizens are able to basically, pay for nursing care. I mean, that's the way I think he's got to do. He's always got to bring that parallel in there because he needs a couple more, shots at the domestic agenda. But
The way the narrative is going too in this race right now is that if Obama has a bad debate, I mean, the press is basically going to write his obituary.
Right.
So just from a pure stylistic point of view, I think Obama needs to have a good debate simply to staunch a little bit more of this bleeding about Romney being the comeback kid.
Yeah, I mean, I don't buy you heard what I said up front about the polling. I think the polling is I think there's a lot more the signal to noise ratio is pretty low in these polls, but we can offline, you and I can talk about where we will put that that batting number. Maybe I'll go 51.5.
yeah, well, I certainly hope he's above 47%. That's about all I'm going to say right now.
All right. Well, then I smell easy mark. More cash for Cedar. Ari Berman, always a pleasure to speak to you.
Always a pleasure to have me. Thank you, Sam.
You said that weird.
Can you hear me? Am I off?
No, you're still on, but you said that weird. You said, always a pleasure to have me.
Oh, yeah. I just love myself so much that it's all about me now. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh,
Sam.
It's the same for me too, Ari. I'll talk to you later. Thanks.
Talk to you. Bye.
Now, the person who's going to send me the email and go, "Boy, Sam, that was very unprofessional of you to do to Ari." I like to give Ari some grief. That's the way. That's the dynamic a little bit. I'm not giving him a lot of grief. He's a young man. He can handle it. Very smart guy too. Not so sensitive as you, who's already starting to write me that email. I can already feel it, folks. Look. We need your membership to support the show, to continue it through the election and through the lame duck session and hopefully into January 2013, where we can cover all sorts of different things. I had a horrible thought in the middle of the night the other night. I don't want to tell you what it was, but it was just had to do with the leverage of the Bush tax cuts. And that's the type of stuff that we'll be talking about in the weeks and months to come. Of course, we will also have other conversations. We're going to be talking. We'll do some debate analysis tomorrow and get some real foreign policy bona fides in the room, as it were. I think we're going to be talking to John Neffel later this week, who spent some time down in Guantanamo. My understanding is not as a prisoner. Later this week, we'll be interviewing Krista Freeland on the elite in this country. Coming up in the better half of the program, going to talk about this really definitive study of the implications of tax cuts and tax increases on the very wealthy and how it affects jobs. More on this supposed potential for detente between Iran and the United States and where that might be coming from. All this and more is yours. Just what I just mentioned is yours. Well, now for free. And so you're probably asking yourself, why should I pay for it? And that's an excellent question. And it's one that I wrestle with every day. Maybe we should put all of it behind a firewall. But expanding the show, I'm not just doing this for the sake of because I enjoy doing it, or to make the millions of dollars that I make on a semi-annual basis on this program. I'm doing it because I want to keep people informed and have some impact on the conversation, which means that I am empowering you people to have an impact on the conversation. And our numbers on our free show are now rivaling small cable outlets. And with that said, the advertising revenue does not. So if you want to help me continue this show, you want to just, I understand for some people getting an extra 50 minutes a day has no value to them. They can barely listen to 40 minutes a day. But if you want that 40 minutes to be there whenever you decide during the week to dip in or during the news cycle to dip in, it's really incumbent upon you to support the program if you can. If you can't, send me an email at Majority Reporters and you want access to the member show, we can work something out. But if you can afford it, it is your support of this program that makes it work. And so I encourage you, please head over to majority.fm, check out that Secret Mormon video. And then what we'll do is we'll put right underneath it a link to become a member of the Majority Report. You want to see that video. It's interesting. It's strange. And then become a member. It's very easy to do. And it'll make you feel good about yourself. I think it should. Also, give us a recommendation on iTunes and join our mailing list. We're starting to send out more frequent emails with other stories that we don't get to or that we think you should watch.
If you watch the listen to the show only once or twice a week, we send out some prime cuts of the show. So you can sign up for our email list just at the bottom of majority.fm. Of course, justcoffee.coop, Fair Trade Coffee Tea. Get a 10% discount code, Majority. If you buy crap through Amazon, buy it through our link. You can find that at majority.fm. Support the show as well. So, but please, if you can become a member, very much appreciated. We're going to take a break, head into the better half of the program. 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. Oh, for members, well, for anybody, I'm going to be at Gotham Comedy Club tonight with Liz Winstead, Kamal Brown, Kamal Bell. Joan Walsh. Who else? Hari Kondabolu.
Sandra Bernhardt.
Sandra Bernhardt. And I'm going to offer a
Liz Winstead. You said Liz
yes,
Winstead.
I'm going to offer a recording of that for members. Yes. You know where else you can get that? Nowhere.
So members will get that later this week. There's going to be 45 minutes up front of banter, and then apparently we're all going to live tweet it. I don't know if we're going to do anything afterwards. But that will all be for you, members. All right, going to take a break. See you in the better half.